Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, let's start with some good news here on this Freedom Friday. Some very good news. The governor says he's well stocked, he's well supplied. He's got plenty of ink for those veto pens because, yeah, that's one major takeaway from this recent legislative session here in Montana is at this point, it's going to come down to the governor reining in this massive spending and vetoing a lot of these spending bills, the line item veto and more. But, yeah, the good news is he told me earlier this morning he's got plenty of ink for that veto pen. But, yeah, I was talking with the governor earlier this morning about the other good news. Coal miners south of Roundup are typically digging that beautiful clean coal out of the ground. But this week they broke ground on a new indoor ice arena, the Signal Peak Energy Ice Arena, with $6 million worth of donations from the Bull Mountains mine south of Roundup. So that's how that whole thing is happening. But you remember that mine was in jeopardy of shutting down if it wasn't for the efforts of Governor Greg Gianforte to keep that mine up and running with a new permit that was issued. So really good news story there. But, yeah, I was talking with the governor, and I said, hey, are we going to see some line item vetoes in particular here when it comes to these big spending bills?
Well, we need a fiscally responsible budget. And in 2021, our budget grew less than 1% in each of the biennium years. In 2023, we kept spending growth significantly below inflation. And I said, that's my goal again. If we want to streamline government, make it more efficient, we've got to fund essential services, but we can't be growing the size of government. In fact, there were calls on the Senate floor for me to veto our way to a balanced budget because I'm not sure everything fits right now. So we're looking very closely at House Bill 2, which is the primary budget. I do have a line item veto option. And then there's a lot of, we call them cats and dogs bills. You know, there's just everything under the sun that people had a good idea. So they wrote up a bill and oh geez, it cost a couple $1 million. And as you said, not everything on those cats and dogs are essential. And we're going to take a hard look at all of them.
All right, there you go. Now, I did see that the governor has already vetoed a couple of spending bills, or at least spending-related bills, citing concerns about a balanced budget, et cetera. But, yeah, just yesterday, later in the morning, Senate President Matt Regeer out of Kalispell and Senate Finance and Claims Committee Chairman Carl Glimm out of Kyla both sent out a press release calling for Governor Gianforte to veto his way to a responsible budget, reiterating concerns about the legislature overspending the state's budget. And, of course, this all happened with a handful of Republicans voting with Democrats to get that big spending across the finish line. Speaking of Senate Finance and Claims Committee Chairman Carl Glimm, he joins us live on Montana Talks right after this to break down some of those numbers for us. And then later on in the show, we'll have open phone lines for anything, everything you want to talk about on this Freedom Friday.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, great to have Senate Finance and Claims Committee Chairman, State Senator Carl Glimm, join us now on the show. Senator Glimm, good to have you on the program. I'm assuming you got to hear what the governor just shared just a couple of minutes ago. First off, any reactions to what the governor just had to say? Because, I mentioned this press release you guys put out yesterday.
Thanks for having me on Freedom Friday, and don't want to miss an opportunity to thank you and George and all the other vets around Montana for your service.
Well, you're too kind. Thank you. Thanks for your sacrifice in the legislative session. Man, you guys, that was like a deployment, being away from your families, and and it wasn't the happiest of times all the time either. So.
It wasn't the funnest session I've been in. I've been in seven sessions, and I would have to say that this one kind of was at the top of unexpected things that happened. But to get to that point, what the governor said, he's going to have to veto stuff to bring us back into a fiscally responsible budget. And so I kind of wanted to wait. We got done sine die last week. And I know that, I know you've been talking about the stuff that has happened all session, but I wanted to wait until our status sheet came out. And so our staff in Legislative Fiscal Division, they put out a status sheet for us every week that kind of tells us where we're at and gives us a map of what it looks like. What does the budget look like right now? What are the cat and dog bills look like that are coming through? Kind of where do we stand in the process? And after we've sine-died, takes them about a week to compile all the rest of that stuff together, because a lot of stuff happens in that last week, to get us kind of an accurate picture of what things look like as it's headed to the governor. And this is before he's done any vetoing, but it is what it looks like after we left town. And frankly, what it shows is a picture that the legislature overspent and we didn't do our job as appropriators. It's our job to balance the budget and send to the governor a balanced budget. Ultimately, he's going to have to do that job for us. He's going to have to veto stuff to bring us into compliance. So it's easy enough to explain to people with your average household budget, right? If you got more going out at the end of the month than you had coming in for the month, you're not balanced. That's exactly what we're looking at the state expenditures. Our revenue is lower than what our expenditures are going out over the next foreseeable future. This very next year, we almost broke even, according to this status sheet. But the year after that, we're right back to $225 million in the hole. This year, we spent money in this fiscal year to the tune of $557 million in excess of what we brought in revenue. Now, we're able to do that because we have ending fund balance. We had extra money that we had sitting at the beginning of session. And if you remember, and I have receipts to back it all up, like Bongino says, right? So at the beginning of session, we had $2.3 billion in ending fund. We came in with record amounts of money sitting in the bank. And now, after the legislative session, what we have left the citizens of Montana with is, even at the end of this biennium, we are below the minimum, generally accepted minimum ending fund balance. Typically, we say that's like 8.3% or $290 million. At the end of this biennium, the budget that we just passed, end of that biennium, we're sitting at $272 million. So we're already below what the minimum best practices is.
Interesting. So is that so? Could you technically make the argument that the legislature, with the spending they passed, did not balance the budget, regardless of what the governor does or does not do with the veto pen? Could you argue that they did not pass a balanced budget, or would they say, well, because there's still a little bit left in there, technically they can claim they balanced it, but looking out over a four-year spreadsheet, which is what the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Division did here, that's when it starts to get out of balance. Am I reading this right?
That is right. You can technically say that we balanced the budget, but the only way that they're able to say that is because we brought in so much money to begin with. If you look at it year by year, how much revenue are we bringing in versus how much expenditures are going out, every year except for 26, we're spending more than we're taking in.
Wow. Now, hopefully the income tax relief that passed will fuel the economy more. And then what we typically see is we cut taxes, that leads to more revenue. So I'm assuming the Legislative Fiscal Division doesn't necessarily account for the anticipated growth from tax cuts. But again, you never know what could happen with the economy over the next 2 years. So they got to go with what they got, right?
That's true. And if you look at what we did with that that income tax break, that revenue is still basically even, even in their projection. And like you say, most of the time when you cut income taxes, it spurs the economy. We get a bump in growth anyway. So that very possibly could happen. What we have is a spending problem. We don't have a revenue problem. We've got plenty of revenue. What we have is a spending problem.
That's
and
right.
I'm going to roll right back into the cause of that was the nine Republicans sided with all the Democrats, and they passed virtually every spending bill there was.
And you guys did your best to try to peel it all back, amendment after amendment, vote after vote. They tried to block all this massive spending, and they were denied by a handful of Republicans and the Democrats. In fact, we got a caller who wants to weigh in on the nine in particular. We'll start with our call next, and then more with Senator Glimm as well.
Securing America.
The House Appropriations Committee held an oversight hearing for the U.S. Army this week as the budget process for fiscal year 2026 continues. California Republican Ken Calvert stressing the importance of the Army.
The U.S. Army is a force that remains the backbone of our nation's defense and the critical pillar in ensuring global stability.
Much of the discussion centered on maintaining that stability. General Randy George is the Army's chief of staff.
Commercial technology is rapidly evolving, especially AI and autonomous systems. And this is impacting the character of war.
General George also testified about the need to stream the funding and budget process to make it more flexible in order for the Army to keep up.
We've got to be able to buy capabilities rather than specific programs so that we can always get our warfighters the best available tech and equipment for the modern battlefield.
Kevin Uretsky, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, what's the beef with this United States-UK trade deal? Well, apparently some really good beef. NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, sent out a press release here in the last 24 hours. President Trump secures trade win for America's cattle producers. We can talk about that and much more here in just a few minutes. If you got something you want to talk about, we'll do Open Lines Friday here in just a few minutes. Or if you want to jump in on the conversation here with State Senator Carl Glimm, you can call in right now as well, 406-294-0970, or message us on the Montana Talks app. Tim in Billings, did you have a quick question or comment for Senator Glimm?
Good morning, gentlemen. So it seems to me like the nasty, narcissistic nine and the Democrats, they're what Laren likes to call Trustafarians. They were living off of the savings and building of funds from the previous legislature. And, you know, it's just, you know, sounds like a very Marxist, socialist way of living, always finding a way to spend other people's money. But honestly, it goes back to the voter and voter responsibility. And if you're a conservative voter in these districts that have these nasty nine, shame on you for not recalling them. Shame on you for allowing them to do this without holding their feet to the fire. And you get the government you vote for. So if you don't like what's going on, shame on you as being a voter that did not hold your government responsible.
All right, Tim, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 294-0970 is the number if you want to jump in on the conversation as well. Senator Glimm, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that he's exactly right. The crux of the problem with this situation that we had in the overspending happened on day one in the Senate when nine Republicans voted with all the Democrats and they shook up the rules on us. And one of the key components that they did in that time was they added four more people to finance and claims. And effectively what that did was it shifted the balance of power from conservatives, which Montanans elected conservatives to come to the state legislature because they like how we are conservative with their money. And they added four extra votes on the finance and claims, which flipped the vote on there and allowed us to basically just be nullified. We didn't vote down any spending bills in finance claims. And historically, both appropriations and finance and claims are committees where if you have a bill that is spending money, historically you went to finance and claims and appropriations, and a lot of times your bill didn't make it out of there because it gets scrutinized against everything else in the state budget, and we have to determine whether that's a wise use of our financial resources. And you make judgments. And a lot of bills would go to those committees, and they wouldn't come out. But not this session. We passed everything out.
Well, and that's the frustrating part here is Montanans see all of this massive spending, growing government, essentially, and that's why we're also hopeful that the governor will veto a lot of this with the veto pen here and the line item veto or straight-up veto, whatever it takes, because we look at that, what, $2-plus billion in surplus. That means the state took in $2 billion of our money, and the majority of that, they're not wanting to give back to we the people. And so, thankfully, you know, one of the good things that did get across the finish line was income tax relief. Residential property taxpayers will get some relief. But it sounds like we could have gotten a lot more tax relief if all of this spending, if the cake wasn't baked on that front.
That's true. And like I said before, we've got a spending problem, not a revenue problem. And we should have done more. I think the income tax bill is a good one. That helps people across the spectrum. It raised the lower rate up so that more people are paying that lower rate, and then it lowered the top rate so that everybody is paying less, even if you're paying in that top rate. But when it comes to property tax, that's a difficult one. We ended up getting some relief in there, but a lot of that is a shift. A lot of that is just moving dollars among property taxpayers. So while some people are getting a lower rate, other people's rates are going up. And we didn't put a lot of state dollars into that. And I think we could have. There was other options out there to use different money to actually supplant some of that. I had a bill that was going to take some of those tourist dollars, those tourist tax dollars that get spent in the state of Montana, and use that to pay for infrastructure that our property taxes pay for, because those tourists get off scot-free. But that bill didn't make it.
Yeah, I like that one as well, because you got all these, what, lodging taxes people pay when they get hotel rooms or rental cars and things like that. So that would have taken, what, half of that money and given it back to we the people for some relief there on an ongoing basis, right? Yeah, I really like that idea. I also understand why we needed structural property tax reform as well. But here's the other challenge is like, okay, the state can do whatever they want with property tax relief, but if these cities and counties come back and deal it anyway. I mean, I guess we'll still save a little bit on our residential property tax from the state, but some of these cities and counties like Missoula are just going to come back and take it right out of your pockets anyway.
They do. And really, none of that property tax that there's some, you know, perception that some of that property tax comes to the state. That property tax that comes to the state gets wrapped right back around and sent back to schools. And in fact, we spend more than that. There's a whole other funding bill that goes back to schools. So all that property tax money is pays for local services that our constituents use.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of those, you're right, there's a lot of those that are voted in levies and stuff that drive those things up. People have to be careful of what they're voting for, because it's going to end up on your property taxes.
That's right. Well, Senator Glenn, great to catch up with you. Thanks for breaking down the numbers here after the dust has started to settle on the legislative session. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, I appreciate it. Yeah, in fact, earlier this morning, I mentioned how I was chatting with Governor Greg Gianforte about, you know, the indoor ice arena. He was there at the groundbreaking ceremony in Billings earlier this week. But while I was talking with him about that, that's when I thought, hey, let's see, get the latest on these spending bills. And then we also talked a little bit about property taxes as well. Full audio is on the Montana Talks podcast, but here's a little more of the highlights in the back and forth talking property taxes.
Solution, this homestead rate reduction, I needed that by February 15th to implement it this year. So what we did was we adopted the homestead rate reduction, but that can't start till next year. So we had to take care of people this year. So we added a one-time rebate this year, plus we adjusted some of the rates on a one-time basis this year. So Montana homeowners will see relief this year. The rebate, I believe, is $400 for every primary residence. Plus, there's a rate adjustment. But then we'll move to the homestead rate reduction next year, which is permanent property tax relief. And basically, a homeowner gets a break, lower rate, if it's your primary residence and this is where you live. Small businesses, real property up to $3 million is taxed at a lower rate. That's going to take care of Main Street businesses. And then we want to take care of renters. So the lower rate also applies to any landlord that rents their place on a long-term basis, including apartment buildings. So that'll be able to pass it on. So you have to say, who's going to pay more? Well, people with second homes that don't rent it on a long-term basis. And as we've looked at this, it's complicated because the mix of, you know, second homes and primary homes in counties differs. So it's not, but in a county where kind of an average county, if you own a primary home and a second home, you're going to see your primary taxes on your primary home go down about what you'll see them increase on your second home. That's how the shift works. So you'll come out about even if you have a second home. But for those out-of-staters with second homes, they're just going to see the increase.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, and I'm seeing and hearing all sorts of rhetoric, all sorts of numbers. One side says, okay, yes, residential property taxpayers will get significant relief, but ag's going to see an increase. The business community might see an increase, like your industrials, like Northwestern Energy, et cetera. Some are saying ag's going to get a big hit. Others are saying, well, it's going to be a small increase, but not that much. And then on the industrial, some are saying, actually, no, some of those industrial energy utilities and others actually might pay less in property taxes. Where do you see it panning out?
Well, the goal here was not to raise taxes on ag or heavy industrial. Now, it's complicated. So when you push on the balloon anywhere, it tends to bulge out in other places. So I can't say emphatically no ag folks are going to see any increase, but the goal was not to have an increase. The same was true with the industrials. The shift is really to second homeowners, so that we could pick up a little bit of from these out-of-staters and give a break to primary residences.
Yeah, about a minute or so to go here before we hit the hard break. Governor, great to have you on this show. Anything else you want to tell folks across Montana in particular?
Well, next week I kick off my 56-county tour. I'll be up in the northeast part of the state, Plentywood and the surrounds. Of course, be out at the Bucking Horse Sale, which is a great trip every year. And then I have the great pleasure of delivering the high school commencement in Ekalaka next week. So looking forward to that.
All right. Yeah, it's full audio with the governor on our Montana Talks website right now. We're going to have the phone lines open for you right now, 294-0970, Power Plus Pain Aid. You guys have been hearing us talk a lot about trade and the importance of buying American-made products. This isn't just an American-made product. This is a product created by a Big Fork Marine veteran, Lee. Great guy. I met him during Trump's inauguration back in Washington, D.C., and yeah, he created this product. It's like an energy drink combined with pain-relieving vitamins. It's a natural way to relieve pain. So you don't have to rely on over-the-counter pain pills and things like this. Basically, you get more gain with less pain. We work hard, we play hard, especially on nice weekends like we're going to see here coming up for this Mother's Day weekend. So check out drinkpowerplus.com, and you can take 15% off your orders at drinkpowerplus.com. Just use the code FLINT15, FLINT15 at checkout. All right, quick break. Back with your phone calls right after this.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
26 nations, over 2,500 people coming through the door. It was a packed house for the 2025 World Angus Forum event here in Brisbane, Australia. Producers from across the nation were there discussing about the future of the Angus breed. And during the World Angus Forum, I was able to catch up with treasurer of the American Angus Association and Montana rancher, Dale Stevenson of Stevenson's Down T Angus. And he shares more about the important role that events like the World Angus Forum play in keeping the Angus breed competitive across the board.
In the fast-paced world that we're living in today, I mean, now there's even more importance with information sharing and data. And 2 years ago, we rolled out the American Angus Association rolled out the World Angus Evaluation, which is a collaborated effort with Canada and Australia so that we're putting everybody on the same playing field. So it's critical for the involvement, and it's a trip of a lifetime.
Cattle, people, innovation, and research. That's been the theme from Sydney to Brisbane as we've traveled on the Angus Trek Tour and ending here in Brisbane for the World Angus Forum. From Australia, I'm Wayne Nordquan.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, for some reason, our little studio board here kicked into manual instead of automatic there. So for a couple of our stations out there, sorry if we misfired our report there during the break. But hey, we're back with it now here, and we've got the phone lines open for you, 406-294-0970. Or you can message us on our Montana Talks app. In fact, we got a message from Hank in Bozeman. This is a story we talked about earlier in the week on the show, and I've got a story on our Montana Talks website right now. And here's the headline. Ask the Sergeant. Montana's veteran senator on DOD reform. So I've got a story about how Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is trimming back the fat, trimming back the bureaucracy at the Pentagon and within the Department of Defense. And a Navy SEAL veteran and Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy weighed in on Laura Ingraham's show. So I've got that story on our Montana Talks website right now. Hank in Bozeman says this, common sense. Pete is doing what should have been done years ago. The military is way too top-heavy. He is returning to the standards that made our military the greatest military force on the planet. Lead by example, lead from the front, and don't ask a subordinate to do anything you're not willing to do yourself. Thank you, Pete. That's the message from Hank in Bozeman. I also got a great message from Eric Moore in Miles City, former state lawmaker out of Miles City, Montana. I'll share that here in just a second. But first, here's the news that he was weighing in on. I shared this on X earlier this morning. President Trump secures trade win for America's cattle producers. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association sent this press release, I believe, yesterday afternoon here. Actually, late yesterday morning. In fact, I just missed it before we wrapped up the show. But they were talking about this this big trade agreement this agreement in principle with the United Kingdom and the United States. And NCBA says this. Most importantly, the agreement includes market access for beef. This announcement follows years of NCBA's hard work building the foundation for a trade deal with the UK, including numerous meetings with British industry stakeholders, members of Parliament, the British Embassy, the UK Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, and other top British authorities. So they're basically calling this a good deal for a trade win for America's cattle producers. NCBA president had this to say, quote, with this trade deal, President Trump has delivered a tremendous win for American family farmers and ranchers. For years, American cattle producers have seen the United Kingdom as an ideal partner for trade. Between our countries' shared history, culture, and their desire for high-quality American beef,
securing a trade agreement is a natural step forward. Thank you, President Trump, for fighting for American cattle producers. And Howard Lutnick, you know, who's been a key member of President Trump's diplomatic team, also called this UK trade deal a historic agreement and historic day, saying that now the sixth largest economy in the world is open for business to our producers. And not just for beef, ethanol, cereals, fruits, vegetables, animal feed, tobacco, soft drinks, textiles, chemicals, machinery, and more is all part of this deal with the UK. So Howard Lutnick shared that on X. Now, what Eric Moore out of Miles City had to say, who's probably checking on cows right now as we speak, he says, President Trump got a tariff reduction to the UK for U.S. beef, which is a great start, but they still have non-tariff trade barriers like implants and carcass wash technology. So there is still more work to do, but nonetheless a great start for U.S. beef in the U.K., according to former state lawmaker and rancher Eric Moore. So, Eric, thanks for that message. Great to hear from you. Back into the phone lines we go. 406-294-0970, Cindy in Hungry Horse. Great to hear from you. What's on your mind this morning?
Hi, Aaron. Hey, I am not going to try to tell you how to do your job, but those nine traitorous senators, those names should be out there every single day. You reach so many people, and they need to just literally be pounded into the heads of these people who have voted for them. So the time when elections come up, they know not to vote for them. And it's just like Dan Bongino says, there are no Democrats that are Republicans, but there are Republicans that are Democrats. And obviously, these are nine that slip through the crack, and they need to be shamed or outed, because I couldn't remember any of those guys' name by the time the whole legislature got through with all of the work that they were doing.
Well, what really needs to happen is if the folks who are outraged about this, they've got to start amassing a campaign right now. And because you're right. Look, here's the deal. How many times did we say the name of Judge Dan Wilson and the Sons of Montana last year? I mean, we brought up their names repeatedly, but here's the deal. I could say their names four times today, five times today, six times today. And what wins elections is hearing something repeatedly over and over again, you know, like on your local radio station. That's why in these big Senate races and things like that, you get sick of hearing their names because their campaign commercials are on so much. And the problem is that what happens in these Republican primaries is most Republicans don't pay attention until after the primary. And then what happens is you get these special interests like the Hospital Association, which also push this radical transgender agenda. And then what they do is they start donating a bunch of money to these third-party groups, and they will call them the most conservative names you can possibly think of, even though they're funded by groups and organizations that are not conservative. And then they weigh in on these Republican primaries, and then you get more moderate candidates that come out of these Republican primaries, especially in very conservative districts. And so kind of like the Supreme Court elections, it's like you get a lot of people that will say, oh, well, we need to do this or we need to do that. But it's like that's why you have to amass a campaign organization and third-party groups to go promote the more conservative candidates in the primaries, just like we've got to amass the resources to combat these Democrat Party mega donors that end up, you know, having outsized influence in our state Supreme Court elections here in Montana. And so often we get so much of the conservative base that look at the school board elections. I don't know what happened in your neck of the woods there, Cindy, but you know, I know while the Flathead, they had a school levy that actually passed. But maybe people in the Flathead trust their schools more than other parts of the, you know, the state. But Billings, for example, you know, they just let the left take over, you know, a school board race. And so it's like everybody gets all whipped up into a frenzy when it comes to presidential races and Senate races, but then school board and primary elections and people just ignore it.
Well, You are right. I will say that's why you're where you're at, and I'm the listener. So,
I don't know about that.
I love your show. You are very informative, and it's always a delight to hear you every day.
Well, you're too kind. Well, it's a delight to hear you, because that's the best part of the show is the phone calls. And you never know what a difference those phone calls make, too. So, Cindy, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in, and especially calling in from some beautiful country there in Hungry Horse. Great to hear from you. One of my favorite pictures of my grandpa was on my dad's side was he's got, you know, one of those old vehicles from back in the day, and it was a photo of him when the Hungry Horse Reservoir was being constructed. And so it's one of my favorite family photos. Let's see. We got Brian in the Gallatin Valley next. Brian, what's on your mind?
Yeah, in regards to earlier this morning, you were talking about a gentleman from Laurel, this Democrat that wanted to support good old grumpy Grandpa Joe Biden.
Yeah, this guy was grumpy because I said something about the pasty old kook Joe Biden, because that's exactly, I don't know if you, did you see any of these highlights from The View yesterday when Joe Biden was there with Jill trying to bail him out? He looked like a pasty old kook, didn't he?
Yes, sir. And he's just going to get older. But here's what I'm going to say to the people that are listening and the Democrats that are actually paying attention and listening to this show and probably sitting back and hating life right now. We, as Republicans, won. We are paying attention and are seeing a president that is actively being a president. For 4 years, he sat on his thumbs, suntanning his testicles.
I'm a little lazy with the language there, yeah. But we get your point.
And did nothing but open up the border to these illegal immigrants and cause this huge disruption to our country.
Yeah, look at all the damage he caused. Oh, but they get offended if you call him a crazy old kook, right? Hold that thought. We got to take a quick break.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know who just stunk up The View. The Bidens joined The View this morning for the entire hour. The audience was caught off guard, but knew something was up when they saw a dozen Secret Service agents and two embalmers. There were a few awkward moments, though, when a confused Joe asked if he could bid on the showcase. But was he surprised Kamala lost?
I wasn't surprised because they went the route of the sexist route, the whole route. I mean, this is a woman, she's this, she's that. I've never seen quite as successful and a consistent campaign undercutting the notion that a woman couldn't lead the country and a woman of mixed race.
Anyway, yeah, absolutely pathetic by Joe Biden. You know, not just what he did to this country, but then here he is still trying to sow racial division, still trying to show division over gender. Yeah, and so, yeah, I shared that clip, and it's like he just looked like a crazy old kook throughout that interview. And that's what offended this liberal less guy in Laurel. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, who claims to be a Republican, like a seminar caller, right? It's like, oh, yeah. Oh, you're offended that somebody called Joe Biden a crazy old kook. Well, we're offended by the people that got slaughtered because of his open borders policies. We're offended by the American patriots that got kicked to the curb and forced out of the military because of his stupid policies. We're offended at $2 trillion deficit and a $36 trillion debt facing this country. Oh, so sorry you got offended because somebody called the crazy old kook a crazy old kook. By the way, that reminds me, I promised I was going to play another great soundbite from Greg Gutfeld's program. He had a great program last night. I need to keep count here. If somebody, if you've got a pen and paper in hand, start making some little hash marks. We've got to count the number of times he says this. So count along with me here. Oh, that's the old clip. Hold on one second. Here we go. Here's the one I was looking for. All righty. We should be ready now.
Finally, let's count the anyways.
What about this version? No, Joe, I don't like that. Well, why? Yeah, man. Anyway, I told you we were going to get any of that done. None of you would have thought it happened.
Yeah.
Not because negative. I mean, it was... Anyway, so what I got in the plane, I went to South Korea, I went to all... Anyway,
0.2% federal
tax.
Nice things.
Anyway, Secret Service, that's the benefit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also means you're not... Yeah. Anyway, okay. I had a bad, bad night.
Yeah.
And I had... Anyway, I don't quite get the anyway.
Hey, that was rough, but it was Joe's first stateside interview since leaving the White House. If you don't count the one with the funeral director.
Oh, Greg Gutfeld last night. Okay, so I only counted six there, so that's not too bad. But I don't know, they were coming at me so fast. I don't think I could keep track of all the anyways that are in there. Anyway, let's go to Jerry in Hamilton on the phone lines. Jerry, what's going on? What's on your mind?
Good morning, Mike. I'll be brief and simple. My question is, why did those nine Republicans vote with the Democrats? Why did they do that?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, they could call into the show. They could be on the show. I'd offered for all of them to be on the show. They could tell us why, right?
I keep hearing on everything that they voted with, but I haven't heard anybody say why. Why did they do that?
Well, what they've said in some guest opinion columns that they've published is they said, well, we were voting to protect the governor's agenda because, see, some Republican lawmakers were trying to undermine the governor's agenda, which, as I've said before, look, nine Republicans shouldn't be undermining their caucus leadership in the legislature, but likewise, the Republican-led legislature shouldn't be actively trying to undermine the Republican governor either, especially when he is the top elected Republican in state government. But here's my response to that. Okay, if you claim that you were voting with the Democrats to protect and advance the governor's agenda, then why did you vote with the Democrats on all of this massive spending that goes far above and beyond the governor's own budget proposal? And how come the governor's income tax plan that I believed an even more conservative tax plan than the tax plan that got across the finish line in the legislature, how come that plan didn't get through? If you were voting to advance the governor's agenda, then how come the governor's agenda, how come you went above and beyond on the spending, right?
Yep, you're exactly right. All right, Aaron, thanks. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Hey, you too, Jerry. Thanks for calling in. All right, getting short on time now. Let's see, or I'd have to tell you to call in by the time we finally got to you. We'd probably run out of time here. But let's see. Oh, man, there was one other thing I was going to get to here, but we just ran out of time. So, Bozeman, Gallatin County, Montana. Last week, we told you how it sure looks like the Gallatin County commissioners are obstructing federal law enforcement. The Gallatin County commissioners are standing in the way of ICE in Bozeman. There's 1,000 illegal aliens in Montana, according to the feds. The bulk of them are in Gallatin County. Look at all of the crimes committed by illegal aliens in Bozeman and in Gallatin County. And yet now it's official. The Gallatin County commissioners are saying no to an agreement with ICE. Former Bozeman Mayor Jeff Krause, somebody had said, hey, look at the latest news out of Los Angeles. And former Mayor Krause, who did a great job as mayor of Bozeman back in the day, he said, oh, no, it's not Los Angeles anymore. It's Bozenuela, with all the TDA gangbangers.